we're on our own. It's just regular people like us. It's moms and dads, and we don't have money behind us or anybody. It's really just us. We sell t-shirts so we can have picnics and stuff. Like, that's really, it's that, like, homemade. But it works.
It's grassroots, and I'm proud of that. Very proud. Yeah. This is grassroots.
It is.
So, and we're going to continue to win with the grassroots. Hi, you're listening to We Are Reopen Bucks. In this series, we sit down with some of the key players in the reopen movement and discuss their experiences navigating the pandemic. Today, I'm speaking with Kayla Audie, a pediatric nurse who worked for the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia until she was fired last fall for making public comments at a school board meeting that were critical of mask mandates in schools. Welcome, Kayla. Thanks for chatting with me.
Hi, Josh. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really grateful to be on here.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious to hear how things went for you earlier on, the whole time through COVID. You're a pediatric nurse there at CHOP. So this crazy thing called COVID comes along. What's life like for Kayla at that time?
Absolutely. So I have been a pediatric nurse for the last decade and recently graduated in May of 2021 with my pediatric nurse practitioner degree and board certification. I was completing my rigorous training during the height of the pandemic. Really lucky to be able to even get a practicum placement, as many, you know, primary care offices were placing restrictions on limiting nurses training in their buildings. But I have dedicated my career and my life to caring for our most vulnerable, complex pediatric patients. Worked as the highlight of my career has been working at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia for their home care department in clinical and administrative roles, caring for patients from every different specialty at CHOP. We have our oncology patients, gastroenterology patients, and et cetera, and doing lots of home education, high-risk infusions in the home, managing central lines, lots of the high-risk and acute skilled care that needed to be, that we were able to bring to the home.
Now, I'm curious about that. I mean, all home care throughout COVID?
Throughout COVID, wow. Yeah. So I remember, you know, when the height of the pandemic, when there were so many unknowns and we went into lockdown, you know, two week lockdown to slow the spread or flatten the curve. And I remember will never forget the first home that I went into in Delaware County, newly diagnosed oncology patient, and I never wore masks around patients, even though, you know, our oncology kiddos were immunocompromised, but I never wore a mask before this. So I remember my first day out, my manager called me and she wanted me to call her after I went into my visit and to see how the visit went, and we didn't know, right? So I'm like, I'm just gonna wear a mask. I'm gonna wear a mask. I should probably just put a mask on and wear a mask around this family. I don't know, you know, we don't know what's going on. How fast is this virus gonna spread? Who has it? We thought the asymptomatic spread, you could have it if you're asymptomatic. And so I put a mask on, wore the mask the whole visit. And I felt good, like, about that decision. I thought that was, like, probably the safe thing to do, right? And I called my manager after, and I let her know how it went. And I said, yeah, I did wear a mask the whole time. And I was told not to because we did not have enough PPE at that time for our nurses to be wearing masks. At that time, masks were not even going to be I had a couple in my bag for the patients that, you know, for my sterile procedures that I would do. But yeah, so I remember being told not to wear a mask in the beginning of it.
And I presume at some point that changes when, I mean, it was over the summer of 2020, the mandate here hits. And by that point, I mean, it's like everything is masked. Yeah.
A couple weeks later, you know, we went universal masking and it's been like that ever since.
Now, that whole time you were going into people's houses to provide care, any experience with COVID, like having to quarantine because, you know, the family tests after they see you and, oh no, someone was positive or anything like that? Or was...
Yeah. So I never, a couple of my colleagues did have known exposure and did have to quarantine. I never had to the entire time that I was out in the field. I wasn't seeing crazy cases going, you know, flying out from all over the place, you would think, you know, for something that was so...
And you're taking care of, you mentioned oncology, pediatric oncology, these patients, I mean, kids who have things going on. And absolutely. You weren't seeing like COVID blow up in that population.
Not at all. And even I was working from January of 2020 through, finished my practicum training in March of 2021, and I never once in my primary care office had a positive case in the primary care setting. Yes, we had outpatient cases, but never once when I would swab for either flu or COVID did I have a positive COVID.
So as you're experience starts to change, or you feel like your mindset changes there, spring of 2021. What's interesting is the board meeting we're going to talk about is Central Bucks School District. So that's your school district. Central Bucks is kind of like Flashpoint in Pennsylvania, maybe in America, where at the end of that spring, the end of that school year, they did an amazing thing in Central Bucks. This doesn't get talked about enough. They held a vote, brought in Dr. Damsker, the health department director in Bucks County, and they went ahead and said, you know what, we're going to make masks optional for this last week of school. Oh boy, did that kind of set off fireworks and really set the stage, I think, for some of what would come over the summer and then into the fall school year. But you have a child in Central Bucks. Were you on board with that by that time? Or were you full blown like cheering for it at that time?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. So yeah, I was. I was so excited that they went mask optional, and that brought so much hope, because the summer previously to that, my daughter was in a summer camp all summer, without masks, and everyone was fine. There was no spread of COVID. And I was ready. I was so excited. I was ready for my daughter to be mask optional. And we went through the summer, all summer camp, you know, without masks. And we had a really good feeling that Central Bucks was going to stick with going mask optional.
It's wild to think back that they did that last week of that school year while there was an indoor mask mandate for the whole state. So you would have this whole situation that plays out, and we're going to talk about it in the next school year, but like Central Bucks really cut the trail, I think, right there. So that's cool and great to hear. You know, your daughter experienced that last week, and then you guys had summer. You get to the end of summer and we get into August, and this is when everything goes batshit crazy in Bucks County. And obviously eventually there would be a statewide order for masks in schools in Pennsylvania. But there is so much to talk about in August just to build up to what happened with you. So I'm going to try to kind of fly through it. The first thing is, I want to say that was probably the time frame when you, working as a pediatric nurse at CHOP, were suddenly confronted with like, okay, the vaccine is going to be mandated for us to keep our jobs. Now, prior to that, like if you go back to when the vaccine started to roll out 8 months before or something, did you know that was coming? Like when it happened, were you like, okay, yeah, this was always going to happen?
I was offered, you know, the vaccine came out and the EUA, and I was offered the vaccine many times. You know, I could have been first in line to get that vaccine, and I wasn't ready yet. I wasn't ready. I didn't know enough, and I wasn't ready to make that decision. And I kept waiting and waiting. And I'm a healthy 32-year-old, without any pre-existing conditions. And I looked at the risks and benefits, and I realized that if I was going to take this vaccine, that was going to be a risk. If I was going to get COVID, that was also a risk. And I chose to not do that.
Had you had COVID by that time?
I had not had COVID. And I had not had any known exposures either.
Wow.
Right. So I kind of knew that it would possibly be coming, but I didn't know how fast.
Yeah, and it's like once it came down, it was August and September was a whirlwind in healthcare for the, I mean, suddenly it was the way of the world all of a sudden with those vaccines. So, okay, so you have CHOP somewhere in there in August, I think, say that vaccines are going to be required.
Yes.
That doesn't fit with you. So there's already I presume you're pursuing something like a religious exemption with them kind of out of the gate for that.
Yeah, so I, right away, I think it was August, might have been even August 11th, I knew the mandate had rolled out, and I submitted a religious exemption right away. I believe that the decision for me to put something in my body that I did not know possible long-term side effects and not given a full informed consent, that decision had to be made between myself and my higher power. And it was a sincerely held religious belief, and I am entitled to that. Anyone is. So
obviously August would become like the month that, at least for Bucks County, just shit hit the fan. It was crazy. We still to this day don't have an answer on where exactly the August 23rd guidance, which would wind up being like the last major guidance the health department would release, who wrote that and where it came from. But that was kind of like the pivotal guidance that said, hey, quarantine healthy kids, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Now, as that's going along, you have an amazing situation where your school district, Central Bucks, as well as several others, they actually hold the line despite the taking down of Dr. Damsker and all these different forces getting involved. Dr. Levy of Doylestown Hospital would try to get involved. Commissioners would try to get involved. Everybody tried to change the situation, but these school boards just held really firm and were like, we're going to school. In fact, I want to say school opened like end of August, what, 30th or something like that. And it was actually mask optional for like a big chunk majority of Bucks County.
Yeah.
So then what happens is we're starting to hit your part of the story here. The statewide mandate comes down. Masks must be required in schools, which is crazy to think that it was that night that Central Bucks happens to have a board meeting. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if that was like rescheduled for something else or there was something special about it, but like it was already on the calendar and then this mask mandate comes down. So suddenly this is a big meeting that's going to happen. Like it was at an amphitheater, right? Or like a,
it was at Central Bucks. So the West, the high school auditorium. Yeah. So it housed a lot of people.
So immediately this is just fully set up. It does make me, when I talk through it, I'm like, that's a little too much by design. Mm-hmm. That's especially knowing what we know now about what happened with the meeting. And,
you know, I think they originally, I mean, from what I know was there was going to be a huge number of people there and they wanted a big enough space where everyone could attend because it would have been, if it was held at Weldon Drive, there would have been limited capacity. So
a lot's going to happen at that meeting. Sort of infamously, that's where Dr. Levy goes up and gives his spiel, arguing that the board needs to mandate masks. It would wind up, there would be some heroics on the board, particularly through Lee Flasblom, who was able to work everything and kind of keep the health and safety plan in place and say, we're going to follow the state masking order, but do it with parent exceptions. Parents can sign off. And that is how eventually Council Rock Penridge, they would all do the same thing. And it just kind of went that way. So there you hit your public comment, which is for those who have been listening so far and haven't heard the point, you gave a public comment, which if you don't mind, like I'd like to go ahead and play and let's listen to it.
Please.
Following this public comment, you would endure a slew of attacks that we're going to talk through, which ultimately led to your termination from CHOP. So let's start with this this comment. Let me pull it up here.
Hi, my name is Kayla. First, please accept my sincere gratitude to each of you sitting before me who have taken on this role to represent our school district, one that has the potential to set the stage for change. Your sacrifices do not go unnoticed. Your role right here, right now, has never been more important. We have an obligation as an educational entity and community to stand grounded in our convictions to protect our children who are 100% this world's future. I'm here to advocate on behalf of my 7-year-old daughter and our most delicate generation, our children. First and foremost, I'm a mother, active and dedicated community member, and professionally I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner at one of the largest children's hospitals in our region. Over the last 18 months, I've served some of the most vulnerable patients and families in PA and New Jersey. COVID is not a threat to our children. What is a threat is the progressive fear-mongering propaganda and the agendas. I urge each of you to take a closer look at who you are. Are you making your decisions out of fear and control in order to feel a sense of security, or are you making decisions for the greater good for all? We need harmony, we need unity, we need peace. We need to respect each other's choices. As a community desperate for healing, we need a health and safety plan that is grounded in personal choice for all and utilizes temporary targeted mitigation strategies that represent each classroom. I am deeply concerned for the social, emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being of our nation's children. The everlasting effects of mask mandates on healthy children is absolutely dehumanizing and deliberate trauma. The consequences are clear: developmental delays, psychological disorders, emotional dysregulation, physiological disorders, post-traumatic symptoms, and suicide. We have a much larger battle to fight, a psychological one. I'm not here to justify the facts that have continued to be censored. The CDC and NIH are federal operating agencies that clearly continue to undermine public confidence in their recommendations. These agencies cannot be the sole source for guidance. This has been validated over and over again. We must make pivotal changes to ensure our children have the opportunity out of childhood. There is a devastating narrative that has to be stopped. This is far from over. I urge each of you to risk it all and dare to be different. I trust that each of you believe in values, ethics, and moral principles. Show our children and our community that you fought to ensure personal choice was your highest priority, regardless of the circumstances.
Thank you. Doreen Stratton.
So, notice the applause.
I talked really fast through that.
Well, and they had cut it down to 2 minutes, so I presume that was like, you had 2 minutes to do it. Yeah. What are your thoughts listening back on that? I mean, now on the other side of the story that we're about to tell with your employment with CHOP, what do you think when you hear those comments? Oh,
I mean, I have tears like right now. I feel I will always stand behind that speech because that was standing in my truth and what I truly believed. And I knew I had to use my voice, and I wasn't, that was truth. That was real. And I believe it to this day.
So a line in there stood out to me. I actually scribbled it down here as we're listening. That first of all, the whole comment is not extreme. It's not pushing something that I can say, okay, that's wrong. There's a lot at these school board meetings. There are a lot of people who get up there on both sides and they just say nonsense that doesn't make any, it's not grounded in anything. They just want to talk. When I listen to that, I'm hearing this one line from it: we need to respect each other's choices. I don't know how anybody could argue that. I honestly don't, but it's not the type of thing that's, you couldn't classify that as peddling misinformation or causing harm or anything else. It's just a statement about where we're at. So you make that comment. Tell me what happens from there.
So I made that comment. And a couple days later, on September 7th, I was contacted via text message from a Philadelphia Inquirer journalist, Jason Laughlin from the Philadelphia Inquirer, and asked, not really sure how he got my phone number, but he asked if I would comment on my speech from the school board meeting on August 31st and asked if I would set up a time to talk with him. And I took a hot second to think about it, and I did. I went forward and I had a phone conversation with him.
Okay. So this is, you know, something's going to get printed. He introduced himself as like a writer at the Inquirer.
Yeah.
So you don't know though, like, is this going to be this way, that way, or just kind of in the middle or whatever?
So the context of what we really spoke about was masking children, right? And I really believe that there had to be, you know, where there is risk, there has to be choice, and that parents did have to, should have had a choice to, you know, mask their child or not. And, you know, there are not many studies that show that masking, you know, with fabric masks or all these, you know, made up forms of face coverings would do anything to protect someone from this virus. There's very little evidence in studies. So spoke in length with him, had a really good conversation. I thought, I do believe that science is not a religion and it's a process that's meant to be questioned. And I never asked him how he was going to use my comments. I was very naive in that part, on that part, but I let it go. And a couple days later, on September 13th, a article was released, front page, I think, of the Philadelphia Inquirer.
It was front page.
Front page, yep. These doctors, titled "These Doctors and Nurses Share COVID-19 Falsehoods," they can become misinformation super spreaders. And I read through that article once, and I don't think I've ever looked back at it. I was extremely disturbed. I was pinned against, slandered against my own employer. And Dr. Paul Offit, the head of infectious disease and policy lab at CHOP. And I was really disturbed. So September 13th, that was released. That article was released. And then on September 14th, I was contacted by human resources at CHOP. And they wanted me to comment. They were opening an investigation on the article and my involvement in it. And I told them exactly what I'm telling you that I did. I spoke publicly at my daughter's school board meeting because I have that First Amendment right. And I never mentioned CHOP at all in any of my speech or comments. And I was not speaking on behalf of my employer of CHOP. These were my own beliefs, but I don't think I made that very clear, I guess, in my comments at school board meeting. Yeah, so had no idea that this reporter, this journalist was going to run to my employer and
Well, let's real quick, so everybody understands listening. Okay, everybody who knows Reopen Bucks knows I have been highly critical of local journalists. Everything from local Bucks County outfits to the Philly Inquirer. I mean, up and down, journalism is really suffering in our area, I feel like. And so I have seen a lot of hackery. And I think we've all talked about that. We know it. It's kind of understood at this point that these people are just pushing a narrative and an agenda. That being said, when I first read that, and I don't think I saw it right away. I think it was a little later that someone tipped me off to what was going on. My jaw hit the floor. It is so incredibly, first of all, flat out wrong. Let's just address the fact that it's obviously saying all kids need to wear masks. They're perfect. They're safe. They're going to stop COVID, yada, yada, yada. It never addressed the fact that the mask mandate was illegal. It would eventually be deemed illegal. I wonder if Jason has ever written, hey, Jason, reach out to me. Let's talk about the fact that that mandate was illegal. It never addressed the fact that, you know, now, just a couple months ago, it's widely accepted all of a sudden because the CDC has said so. Cloth masks never did anything. Never did anything at all. So at that time, this article is being written to like malign you under this guise of, okay, look, healthcare professionals are spreading misinformation and causing harm. And what really stuck out as being particularly nefarious in it is you could tell that article was really pushed by CHOP itself. Paul Offit was making comments. It clearly had to be approved by the hospital, this whole thing. I mean, that's your own employer. Yeah. Before they've spoken with you, working with the journalists to paint this story. It felt to me like I was watching them make an example out of a sacrificial lamb so that the other lambs know to stay in the pen and not question things, not ever say anything like that. Like, it just felt so wrong from a perspective of an employee and employer relationship.
Yeah, I realized, you know, after the fact that CHOP Publications, this was planned. They knew that I was going to be cited in this article. They knew I was an employee at CHOP. They knew I had a religious exemption in. And I was perfect bait. Yeah, it was. Like, I was being sacrificed. And, you know, if you speak against the narrative, this is what's going to happen to you.
Right.
Yeah.
Something that totally needs to be said, because I think this is too badass not to mention, is that that article drops on the 13th, and you mentioned that HR reaches out to you for the first time the next day on the 14th. That night, you're back in the Central Bucks Corps board meeting that was on the 14th, and you made a comment again. Tell me a little bit about that. I mean, did you question, like, okay, should I just, like, not go tonight? Or
no, I knew that this was going to be my next opportunity on my path to advocate for our children, because there were so many other medical professionals that weren't, like, I knew that I wanted our children to be able to have an option to not wear a mask in school. So I was going to continue to use my voice and to use my First Amendment right to be able to speak. And I always spoke when I made comments, it wasn't to bash the other side. It was that there has to be choice, and everyone needs to respect others' choices. Not all of us disagree. That's what makes this nation amazing, is that we are so diverse in all that we are. We don't need to agree on everything, and it definitely, we don't have to agree on science. That is always changing and always a process. Yeah. So I was ready to be back there to speak for our children.
So I assume then, in the way you answer that question, if you look back at the totality of, like, those comments and then what happened with the article and everything, like, if you could go back and just not give the comments, you'd still do it all over again?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I knew that if I did not stand in my truth and my convictions and my values and ethical principles that I hold in all that I do, I was nothing. I was nothing if I could not follow through and stand for what I believe in. I believe in respect and choice, and that's the foundation. Mm-hmm. And it's very simple. It does. And regardless of any circumstances, I'll always believe in that.
It's an amazing lesson in what I feel like a lot of people on our side or whatever, like in Reopen Bucks, they're very afraid and I would say almost controlled by cancel culture and the idea that at any moment they could set their sights on me and I lose X, Y, or Z thing. I mean, you mentioned you just come out of that program. You were primed to, like, go do great big things with them. I understand that you had, like, really good reviews and you were very well respected and everything. And we're willing to put that on the line in a very big way. How did it go after? So just a few days later in mid-September, you would be, like, terminated officially for it. How did it go from there? Like, would you say you landed on your feet?
No. So, I mean, I definitely, I was terminated and I really had a lot to grapple with. I knew that this could have happened. So I kind of went into this acceptance phase, like, really quick, like, okay, this is it. I'm going to keep pushing forward. Right. And I didn't take that time to, like, fully grieve what exactly happened to me and what I lost. I worked, like, I dedicated my life to my profession, to advocating for children, to becoming a nurse practitioner, to be able to advocate at this higher level. So, and I had just graduated. I just put myself through grad school. I'm a single mom. And to have that all of a sudden just be everything that I thought I was going to have and the journey that I was going to be on and just pulled out from underneath me, was devastating, but I never had the time. I didn't have the time to sit with it and really feel it until probably now, 7 months later. Mm. I have had the opportunity to slow down a little bit. I was able to get a fellowship opportunity with a children's health organization that accepted my story. They accepted my truth and everything that I've been through and accepted me for who I was and where I was at. And I've been able to slow down just a little bit, but all of this trauma that has kind of come back to me full force. And I'm like, I had never really took the time to process and grieve the discrimination and shame and everything that I lost. And I needed to, a couple of weeks ago, I wrote out my story. I wrote it out just on paper. And I sent it to a journalist with our children's health organization. I'm like, I don't know what you need to do with this, but I needed to get this out. And here's my story. Do whatever you want with it. Save it for yourself, whatever. But I know the only way I will heal is to be able to tell my story. And I didn't want to for so long because I did, I felt pretty, at times I would feel ashamed.
When you say ashamed, like ashamed of being terminated by CHOP or like victimized?
I think victimized is a better word. Victimized. Like people don't, I want people to know that I was a dignified, passionate, respectful nurse full of integrity and accountability. And I never, ever did anything wrong to ever put my patients in danger and never would do anything to jeopardize my employer, but I was entitled to my own beliefs.
Can we paint that picture of, I mean, when you talk about feeling victimized, again, I go back to like the article. It's literally pitting you. I'm looking over the table at you right now, like a young mother speaking at a school board meeting about your opinion on your kid having to wear masks or not wear masks. Nurse. I mean, I'm not finding the right word, but I just want to say that's grassroots. You're a real person. And that article pitted you in that story against these people that, first of all, the way the article was written in conjunction with CHOP and Dr. Offit, and it was trying to defend Dr. Levy, who spoke at the same meeting that you did and argued for the other side. This massive system and infrastructure and power. And it was like they had to pit that against you, little old you, because you were the big threat to their house of cards.
Right.
I mean, it's hard not to relate to that victimization and see that they just came after you because they could.
Yeah, they had the power to do that. And I, everything, my character and everything that I am was washed away. Like it was washed away. They didn't take into account at all what I contributed to the enterprise and my department. It was this mom, this nurse wants kids to have the option to go into to be mask optional in schools. And that was like that was a threat. Like,
yeah, too much of a threat.
Too much of a threat. And that there was no accepting that belief.
Your story reminds me a lot of Dr. Otteri at a Doylestown hospital, world-renowned heart surgeon who, now with his story having happened, so many people come to us and tell us like, oh my gosh, I need to tell you this man. He saved my grandpa or he saved my dad or all these things. Wonderful bedside manner. We loved him. And he built a wing at Doylestown Hospital straight up off of the back of his skill. They built a cardiac surgery center and they just cut him loose and let him go because he's, what, too dangerous to the house of cards. It's really stunning when you step back and think the power structure actually is very insecure about itself.
Very. I think that is such a good word. It's insecure, that power structure, for sure. I mean, how can you do that to someone that completely, they dedicated their life to a hospital system and their patience and their life to practicing medicine, and to just to let them go because they chose not to put something into their body that they made, you know, made that choice not to. That's so wrong. It's just wrong. It'll never be right.
It's just amazing that we had to go through such. I like that you used the word trauma earlier. And I particularly like that you described that at the time, you're just moving through a situation and you're kind of like ready for it. You're in battle, so you're hardened. You understand what's happening, but at the same time, it takes a lot of time to unpack and deal with like what exactly just happened. And I look back over all of these 2 years and there were people saying things from the beginning that were so clear and concise and wound up being exactly right, that we need to have an honest conversation at some point about not just how we got that so wrong and listened to the wrong people, but what do we do about the collateral damage? And that's you and your life, your job, your role in the community, mothering your daughter, I mean, the whole thing. So with that, let me ask, as we move to wrap up here, where do you go from here? I mean, you mentioned you're starting this new fellowship. That sounds fantastic. It sounds like things are moving in the right direction. So where do you think it goes for you?
So, I mean, I am so grateful to have been offered this fellowship opportunity to work with an advocacy team and on multiple projects. And it's been able to tie in a lot of my clinical skills, as well as the new me who's really advocating at a very different level for children in a different way. But I want to practice medicine. Mm-hmm. I want to practice pediatric medicine.
It's like why you went into it.
It's why I went into it. Yeah. I believe that I am a natural healer. Like, I truly believe that I would never have been brought so far through my academic and professional career to have it just completely tossed in the trash. And now I'm at this phase where I like am reinventing all these different pieces of this puzzle and all of my different experiences and what I've gone through and how I want to bring it to practice medicine. But I'm struggling, of course, with finding like-minded physicians. So, you know, in Pennsylvania, as a nurse practitioner, you need two collaborating physicians to be able to practice in Pennsylvania. So finding physicians is really difficult. And I think about, you know, all of these nurses and, you know, some physicians that were ejected from their healthcare institutions, and where are their stories? There's a lot of people that I know are struggling with the same things that I am, and we don't have a place to go, and that's sad. So I don't know. I believe though that there is going to be a huge paradigm shift and how. I believe in restoring the patient-physician covenant of trust. And I think that is, I don't know what will happen to our healthcare systems, but it's going to be very interesting to see what happens.
I'm ready to pay. We don't, because of COVID, we don't take our children to the pediatrician anymore. We don't really seek out care. I am fully ready to bring my whole family in as many times as I can to pay out of pocket to someone who will give it to me straight about what's really going on and not play the game that these systems and institutions unfortunately have been dragged into. I think that that is a prime, it's almost like a market just waiting to happen.
Absolutely. I think people just want full transparency, you know,
choice,
you know, we're not, I believe in not telling people what to think. It's how to think, how to ask questions, because I completely was blind. I lacked that. I didn't ask questions before. I just followed what was told was good and what I should do. And that's how you're going to protect your child. And and I just followed it. I never knew how to ask questions because I believe we do put physicians on a pedestal at times, but this experience has really...
It's destroyed trust.
Destroyed trust.
We don't... why I describe we're not seeing the pediatricians anymore. We just don't trust this system. How can you? When you've seen them be so blatantly wrong and not even care that they're so wrong.
Yeah. I don't agree with the way the medical community has handled this situation. And many, unfortunately, are very blind to the coercion and the manipulated science and data.
I don't know where we're going to go from here, but, you know, hopefully you're able to find a path that works really well for you. I personally feel like, I mean, first of all, you're in extremely good company with this like cancel culture thing that happened where like it's you. I mentioned Dr. Atteri, Damsker. They canceled Damsker in a lot of ways. I mean, these are some of the best. So I know it sucks and it's incredibly unfortunate and you're just now coming to terms with dealing with some of it. But I have a feeling and hope that on the other side, there's really good things.
I so agree. I mean, I do. It's been a really tough path to walk, but every step of the way, it's made me stronger. And I know, you know, in order to find, you have to be able to walk through darkness to be able to find light. And I always cling to that too. Like I needed to walk through this. And I don't know why. I don't know why I'm one of few, but I know it will change the trajectory of where I will go. So
it's much needed right now.
Yeah.
Much needed. Thank you for the bravery when everything was on the line to do what you did. And I go back to, and I'll kind of end with this. As soon as everything kind of went to shit there, you walked back in there and said the same thing at a second meeting. And I don't know why. I love that. I mean,
yeah.
Like you said before, you found your truth. You're going to stick to it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me share my story and be a voice for all those nurses and doctors that have had similar situations happen. And I really feel compelled that this is where I'm supposed to be.
I love it. Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
See you guys.